Hello and welcome to the Knowledge Without College podcast. This is your host, Patrick Butler. And today, my guest is a man named Seamus McNally. Seamus is a director, producer, writer, and an acting coach working with actors on shows like Orange is the New Black and Black Mirror. More recently, he has pivoted to working on a documentary film about a tragic miscarriage of justice within the Spanish legal system. It's a really crazy story. In this episode, we talk about both his experience as an acting coach, some great tips there, and also about his revelations while creating his new documentary. So without further delay, please enjoy this episode with Seamus McNally. So, hey, Seamus, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I came across your work a little while back, and I think what you do is really awesome, and I'd love to just share some of your experiences with the audience here. So, I mean, first off, what got you into the industry that you're in now in the first place?
Well, I guess it wasn't any great act of bravery initially. I was really kind of a pretty adrift street kid, I would say, kind of. I was really kind of a punk. High school dropout, wandering party boy kid, and traveling a lot. And I started just really kind of adrift in every way. I thought I wanted to be a ship's captain for a while. And I dropped out of high school and just found myself working in the boats up and down the Eastern seaboard. And then, finally I was like, wow, this is really rife with extreme alcoholics and drug addicts and directionless people. And I'm not having enough fun to justify this path. And I sort of stumbled into what was kind of somewhat a family business. My father was an actor, and he's never a very successful one at that. But I just kind of, for lack of anything else really at the time, it just seems so random, I just kind of stumbled into it. And then a little ways into it, I thought, wow, this is pretty profound stuff. And I kind of never really came up for air. Not that I remained an actor for all that long. I always felt I was in love with studying, which a lot of my friends who went on to be much more successful professional actors, they're always like, be careful of staying in class too much. You study for a while, but then you got to get the hell out there and learn what you're doing in the field. And I was kind of always like the opposite. I was like, I'm really digging the room where the process happens and where the craft keeps reinventing itself. And I fucking hate show business. And I hate the audition process sucks and material sucks. And why are we killing ourselves to support these garbage scripts? What the fuck? I was always a bit more of a teacher, at least more of a kind of really into being in the classroom, and then also started early on in my early 20s, even started developing this faculty and certainly appetite to develop material and just make better stuff. We're living in a time where there's a lot of great material floating around, but in the early 90s, I'd say even late 80s, early 90s, the era I'm talking about, it was a little harder to come by great material, especially as a young starting actor. So what happened was I started a development company with a couple of producer lawyer types, and we started buying the film rights to books and stage plays, and just driven with the desire to create better material, better scripts. I kind of pushed that and then we ended up selling that company, and I kind of, that was a bit of an end of an era for me, where we just, you know, I just hit a certain point where I was like, well, I don't really want to be a development guy anymore, enough of this. And I really segued into directing, and my teaching and coaching of actors was really an extension of that. Yes, that's like in a kind of rambling career path. It's just, yeah, that's sort of how that happened. And now I'm really a many years in committed filmmaker, and fortunately I've had quite a bit of success as a teacher and as a coach of actors and directors, really, for a wide array of film and television projects. So that's my world. I'm fortunate enough to be working at the top of my game, pretty much, top of the field doing that work. And yeah,
that's awesome.
How am I doing so far?
You're doing fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. All so right. Let's talk about some of that work they've done with some of the more notable TV shows. How did you start to work with shows like Orange is the New Black and Vinyl Alex Haley's Roots? Like where did you
First of all, my own teachers that I worked with, one great, I think before even getting into that, I would say, because it's easiest leading in, you know, circling back around the people who I was studying with. I really had two primary mentors, and they're both a bit unusual. One is a woman named Gloria Maddox, who was an incredible teacher of improv and one of the mainstay teachers at Michael Howard Studio in New York, which was a great place to be, especially then. It still is. There's a lot of great teachers knocking around there. But Gloria had originated a lot of Sam Shepard's early work, and who Ed Norton worked with her at the time. There's a lot of great actors. A lot of my contemporaries were really killing it in her class. But Gloria contracted ALS at quite a young age. She was still in her mid-50s. Yeah, it was horrendous in many ways and so enlightening in others. We all just basically nursed her to her last breath. And learn so many life lessons. But a little before that happened, she at one point just stood up in the middle of class one day and just stopped class. She was on a new medication. She just said, all right, I can't do this anymore. Stop two women doing a scene, and said, I'm sorry to stop, but I have to leave now. Seamus, take over. And I guess I'm the only Seamus in the room. I thought, okay, I guess that's my cue. And I literally just kind of heartbroken, just moved up and sat in her seat and started teaching. I was about 26. And years later, I met this guy named John Osborne Hughes, who's a British theater director. And he's the other person whose terminology I draw from a lot. He's a genius director and teacher himself. He works out of London, but he works on a real long form training technique. He teaches people for years. He really takes years to get your head around what he does. It's very scientific. So I worked with both of them. And then, as I was saying, as I started directing stuff and really started focusing on directing my own material, I would just hire the best actors I could possibly work with, the best actors I could get to, and really not necessarily the most famous, but I would take the casting really seriously of these little shorts that I would do and television pitches that I was pulling together at the time. And I reached out to a few people who we just created this incredible rapport, because not a lot of directors, especially directors who aren't wildly established, not many of them are great actors directors. And at that point, I just had a faculty for it. So Nick Sandow was one of those people who I got to do a couple of short pieces with that were both really pretty awesome. I'm pretty proud of the work that we did together. And it was just, and then I ended up moving around the block from him, and he ended up getting his, he was just, you know, one of these kind of late blooming successes as an actor. He's always been a genius. Everybody knew him as a character actor kicking around New York. But then he landed the role of the warden in Orange is the New Black. And it was just kind of a no-brainer for him to call me. He's like, Seamus, can you just, like, help me get this shit together? I know you're coaching these other people. And, like, can you just work with me? I'm suddenly getting reams of material all the time. It'd just be really helpful. So I started working with Nick. And before you knew it, I was coaching every single episode of Orange is the New Black. And I was just totally up to my gills with him in trying to help develop that character. And then, incidentally, other actors from the show I got a couple calls from other people playing much lesser roles, but I got to, you know, so that's just one show. So I was never necessarily employed by the production company or the show itself. It was always featured talent in the show. Another one of my key clients and just a really good friend and an actor I respect a lot is a fellow named Babs Olusan Mokun. He's a gentleman of Nigerian descent, but son of a diplomat and lived all over the world. He's a very worldly, interesting guy. Incidentally, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu master also, like runs his own dojo and stuff. He's a freak. He's an absolute freak of nature, but a really strong actor and a wonderful guy. And so he's another one through Babs, really. You know, I ended up working with Black Mirror, and ended up working with Roots and working him with Babs through the whole screen test process, which got him into Roots. And yeah, he's a real badass working actor. He's always in the top. He's a very specific type. So when he's right for a job, very few other people are right for it. And so, you know, so he works all the time and I work with him all the time. And yeah, so it's really through a few great actors who I have longstanding relationships who have opened the door to all this other material. And then people start looking at your resume and they're like, holy shit. And then, so now I get hired by the National Acting Union of Denmark and I'll do these weekend intensives. That's really what I do now, is 3 to 5 day intensives where I usually work with fairly experienced actors and directors, and they come in good and leave better. That's the game.
That's awesome. You know? Yeah. What do you think are some of like the most effective methods that you teach, or what makes your coaching so effective?
Well, I tell you, what is it? Why is it? What is the basis of my technique? I would say, excuse me, I'm checking power on my device here.
Oh, sure. Sure
that I don't fade out. No. So what do we do? I tell you, I've boiled this down. Once again, as I was saying earlier, this John Osborne Hughes fellow, who is, brilliant teacher, and I've sort of, this guy has this encyclopedia of terminology that he instilled in all of us who passed through his technique and, you know, really went for it and stuck out this 3-year program with this man. But I always found, wouldn't it be great to be able to, you know, transfer some of these techniques and these principles onto people, but I've never had the time to do it. I'm always completely under the gun. People call you generally in a state of emergency, and they just generally do. There's very little time. So what I've done is kind of develop my own shorthand for delivering work that took me 3 years to learn. So it's really, because of that, it has really kind of become its own thing just by virtue of necessity. So what I do, I've come to define it, the key principle really underneath it all is stillness. I work with, I don't like to use the word meditation a whole lot because it often evokes a whole lot of Buddha, yoga, levitation. I don't know what. People have some spiritual baggage when they hear some idea. So, but really, stillness exercises that really become instill discipline for managing one's attention. And it's this work that is the most, it's really all about helping people raise their level of awareness while they're rising to the incredible demands of bringing an exciting story to life. It's really hard to do. It's really hard to be in your body and be who and where you are and simultaneously create another person's thinking and another person's experiences that may be wildly different to your own at the same time. You know, it's oh, yeah. Underrated how absolutely fucking impossibly hard it is to do really well. A lot of people can take a swing at it and get away with it, but to do it exceedingly well is just so hard.
Yeah, I would love to know more about that stillness that you're talking about. What are the challenges that most people that you work with face when trying to cultivate that skill?
I would say cell phones and caffeine and all. I'm actually not even kidding. We are living in an age where we are conditioned and ever increasing our conditioning of ourselves to have our attention spread out all over the place and live in the state of constant hyper connectivity and hyper involvement in the world and everyone we know all the time. And it's just it seems like it becomes increasingly difficult to do. And so, you know, it really is very basic meditation exercises that I walk people through. I'm pretty insistent upon people doing it, for especially anyone who's involved in one of my workshops. We're doing it 5 and 6 times a day. The first time in the morning for a half an hour, 20 minutes. And then we start training people to do it for 5 minutes and for 1 minute and for 10 seconds so that we have ways of just constantly tapping that underlying connection that we have to our sort of limitlessness that exists beneath our visible thinking. And so by continuing and kind of committing ourselves to having all of our creativity emerge from that facet of our consciousness, something shifts that's very deep. There's both at one point a real letting go and yet simultaneously accessing a whole new kind of world of impulses. And it just happens. It's not nothing too magical about it. It just happens. But because I've been working at it and because I learned it from the places I've learned it, I've figured out how to just apply it very specifically to this craft.
I think that's really awesome. I feel like while it's something that you're coaching actors on, I could imagine a lot of people could use some of those same exercises just themselves. You know, if it's cell phones and attention and everything, that's certainly a problem for everybody. Yeah.
You're not kidding.
Would you be able to share any of those exercises that you have, you know, the people you work with practice?
Sure. Well, I mean, basically, I'm trying to imagine people listening to a podcast where everything goes absolutely silent for the next 5 minutes. So I'm going to try to figure out how to communicate this to you in a way that's not what's happening.
Yeah, sure.
So one principle, the one that kind of comes after stillness, I think we all have moments in the day where we can connect to that silence and stillness that's actually beyond the furthest sound you can possibly pick up. And there's a point of our attention. It's just about resting your attention on the silence beyond all sound, literally, physically beyond the furthest sound you can hear right now. And when you rest your attention on that point, it becomes apparent that there is a certain identical silence and stillness that exists within. And when we encourage our attention to have one of its two feet, really, two primary facets planted there, it just sort of, the work that just does itself. Falling still is falling still. The principle that I think is a real game changer is the next principle that we call presence, what I have come to call presence, which is really just about what we call upon to keep our attention from being in the past or in the future, rather than preparing ourselves or bracing ourselves for some eventuality that's coming our way based on past experiences and past traumas and past victories. This is how we spend most of our day, frankly, is with our attention largely, if not rooted, very much informed by a past or future complex. And the way to overcome that, what actors need to do, and frankly, anyone who needs to publicly present, I have worked with people, I can't really talk a lot about the people in the political world that I've worked with, but I have done this work for pretty prominent people in holding public office as well. Our present attention only, and the only thing that's really happening, is what's happening right this moment. And awareness being really just the ability to watch one's own thoughts. That is how I've had it defined in a way that was most effective to me. So, these are some of the early principles. It's really cool to watch people apply this stuff that sounds kind of a little fortune cookie philosophical shit to me when I hear myself talking about it. It's great to see people having to deliver on high stakes narrative script, story driven, character driven material, and having to create the tension and bring all the elements to life to really make a scene cook. And to watch these principles actually apply in the way that they're most needed, it's really it kind of blows my mind every time. So so there's that.
That's really cool. I love those tips too. Just sort of, I like the idea that you physically don't have the bandwidth to think about anything else if you're focused.
No, that's on the senses. Yeah. That's what we're always doing. We're always trying to mind fuck ourselves out of the panic that emerges when we have to deliver. And so how is it that we can just be here and now and acknowledge that most of our stress, our panic, our anxiety, our performance anxiety, all that stuff comes from imaginary problems and imaginary concerns. And yes, it's a great thing to do, to just saturate the mind with things that are actually really happening right here and now that are very simple, that it just gives access to a greater part of our creativity, you know, when we're not just tripping and dealing with our adrenaline racing through our system for all the wrong reasons. It kind of allows that same surge of adrenaline to reemerge in a way that actually serves what you're doing. You know, you actually find yourself having character adrenaline rushes rather than an actor or going through that or putting themselves through that. I've been called upon of late to get involved with a documentary, which is not my usual bag whatsoever. And so I'm finding myself having to apply a lot of what I have learned and cultivated to a very different arena with a very different end in sight.
That's sort of what I want to touch on next. I mean, first off, you know, given your background, what made you or compelled you to take on the challenge of doing something sort of outside of your typical wheelhouse?
Yeah, well, it was a little, I really had to think it through, mostly because I was contacted basically, this story came to me, and this opportunity availed itself. And it was really fascinating, and I had a passing relationship. At least I had some familiarity with this one person who was whose family was subject to this crazy situation, and I thought about giving it away and passing it along. I think what it was a combination of things. I think what drove me to take on this documentary, which is incidentally a doc about, it didn't start out this way, but what it has become is a documentary about what is basically a systematic frame job of this one family who have been taken advantage by a couple of rogue people within the Spanish criminal justice system, specifically the Canarian criminal justice system. And it's about a family that were falsely under false claims and unsubstantiated suspicions, basically illegally, for all intents and purposes illegally, extradited and put in prison in Gran Canaria without having any evidence put against them, any official charges put against them, and certainly no trial or no trial in sight, all under this crazy ass Spanish loophole that is known as pretrial detention. It's very un-American for us to wrap our heads around this, but, and it's also very counter to the mandates of the EU, but somehow they've managed to still remain part of the European Economic Community here, the European Union, and keep these medieval ways of handling their justice system in place. And it's shocking, it's terrifying. And I can't go into crazy detail about it, but that's what. So, but I find myself now dealing with traumatized family. We're talking about a man and a woman in their late 60s and early 70s, nerdy academic types, you know, who are working, you know, just not hardened anything, really vulnerable people. And then they're 30-something son, who are all thrown in like really heavy prison situations for 2 years and 2.5 years without anything backing it up. And so I'm dealing with these people, and I'm also dealing with a good monkey barrel of lawyers and press people and forensics people and digital expert witness people, all shredding the case against these people. I mean, it really started out on my part as an investigation, like how this can't be all smoke and no fire. What did these people, you know, it was almost like a whodunit, what's underneath this? And we started lifting veil after veil until we realized, no, this is a fucking frame job by a broken, corrupt, and evil a few evil people within a really dysfunctional system. And so that's just inadvertently what it's becoming a portrait of.
Wow. That is quite the story.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Do you have an idea of when the documentary will be out?
No.
Story is still unraveling?
It is still unraveling. I mean, we could. We have enough. There's enough information in place to... There's enough information in place. We sort of have the footage we need to do it. But yes, I would love to see the story bend even further. It's already a matter of time before it just keeps going more and more their way. Meaning the EU is now involved. It was actually the international courts that started putting pressure on Madrid, saying, "What the hell's going on down there? Why are these people? I mean, we know about your whole crazy pretrial detention trip that we don't support, but like 2 years, people who are suspects without any more than being sus, like what the hell's going on? They had to lift this weird veil of secrecy, and then they, when they realized there was nothing behind, they were just forced to let these people go. So now they're on this kind of home arrest, this island. It's very odd. It's very odd. It's very odd. And I would like to see things. It's a matter of time before the scales start tipping more and more in support of these families, these people who are just really political pawns. They're political pawns in a much bigger story, and it's becoming very obvious that that's what's happening.
Wow.
But it's been a hell of a journey just learning about the world, about the world. It's been a hell of a journey learning about how privileged and small my perspective is. I thought I knew a few things, but I realized how blinded I am by being an American. At this point, I'm based in Berlin, and I sort of spent much of my life here as well, and in Europe. So, as an American, as a New Yorker, even, and as a Western European perspective, we have these judgments about right and wrong and corrupt and not corrupt and clean business. And, you know, and the vast, vast majority of the world are trying to conduct their lives under a very different set of constraints. If you are from China or Russia or anywhere on the African continent or South American continent, the vast majority of the world, in India, there's just so much graft everywhere that the idea of having some kind of clean track record by some polished Western European or American standard, and then of course we're finding we don't uphold those either, but that construct is absolutely imaginary for most of the world. It's just fascinating to learn how that really works in detail, in as much brutal and vivid detail as I have been exposed to in this past year or so.
Yeah, I can imagine if you're interfacing directly with the family that's been affected to see it that up close and personal.
Somewhat. I've been checking in with the family, but it's the interfacing with digital forensics guys who are saying, like, look at the evidence that was used to put these people in jail. This is like a 12-year-old would know better than to conduct themselves in this way. This is absolutely trampled on evidence. There's no way this should ever be able to be used against a person. And now we're living in an age where, you know, that's such a weapon used to put people in office or keep people from being elected, or how to just absolutely tear people down, have them thrown in jail. I mean, the protocols that are required to protect our conduct in this part of the world, in this part of how our society operates, it just becomes very, very high stakes, and when you see it neglected to this degree, it's terrifying.
Wow. Do you see this experience working on this documentary? Is that compelling you to want to take on other investigative sort of tasks, or do you think this will be your last one?
I tell you what, I love watching them. I kind of get, it's hard, I only really like watching great narratives. Great works of fiction. I don't like just kind of binge watching stuff because it's kind of exciting and it's, you know, pretty cool lead. I need stuff to be good. I need the fiction narrative work to be really good. That's what I love to watch. I get really disappointed watching stuff that's not great, and or I like to watch documentaries. Like, I love watching them, but making them ain't my bag. It really ain't my thing. However, it has definitely informed the way I would go about my narrative work. It's I have a different way of asking questions and a different way about trying to shed light on a subject. And all the fictional stuff I'm drawn to is, of course, very much paralleling world events and, yeah, troubling social conditions and, you know. So it's not wildly, it's not, they're not miles apart from each other, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, I think that's really awesome. I'd love to see that when it comes out. Hopefully, yeah. You know, justice is served at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'd like to think that it in some odd way or other, things come around. It's sometimes hard. It's very easy to look at things more cynically and just, it's very easy to support either perspective that there is some kind of justice or that the, you know, the people who try to just get ahead and play the system and play other people in any way they can for their own ends. That they walk scot-free and often run the world. There's a lot to support that argument, but yeah, I would like to think some kind of justice will prevail, mostly because of the absolute dedication to seeing it prevail on the part of the family and on my part and on the part of the people who are as concerned as I am about a system that is becoming more and more toxic all of the time, and more tools are availed to people to do harm in a way, if that is their intent. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you see this story that you're covering now as you know, having some sort of relation to, you know, some of the concerns or, you know, problems that are happening politically in America as well?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, I think right now I'm in a certain journey where I'm looking. I think it's really important to look beyond our own borders, because right now the world is getting so much smaller, and what's happening in Berlin is so close to what's happening in America. What's happening in the Saudi embassy in Turkey is getting closer and closer to what's happening in America. And what you are doing right now, what you, Patrick, are doing right now, you get fucking killed for, bro, in most of the world. Most of the world, somebody would burn your house down, and you'd be in your pajamas collecting your family around you, watching your house burn, and somebody would walk up and say, "Well, that's the good news. That's just a little warning. All right, I'm looking forward to hearing your next podcast." And if there is a next one, you'll see that that was as good as it's going to get. And that's a whole lot of the world. It's a whole lot of the world. Yeah, where if you're actually,
I was going to say, yeah, I think it's you know, the liberties that we sort of take for granted in the United States, it's hard to put in perspective unless you go and witness some of the events in other countries.
Well, what it also does is then it starts shifting your perspective on what's happening around you. And because you start really paying attention to how a truly broken and toxic judicial system that accesses the press as a tool, as a device to do its bidding. You start seeing that, and then you start looking on the home front and getting a sense of what's happening in our time and the war on information that's happening in America, perhaps in a way that's no, it's not the circumstances that I just described about your house burning. It's not, you're not trying to shake the tree in Nigeria. Or, and that there's a lot of places worse than that.
Yeah, it might not be the, you know, in some cases you're seeing in this war of information, you know, people, their houses aren't being burnt down, but if they're being thrown off of different social media platforms or being debased, then
yeah,
it's effectively the 21st century version of that.
Yeah, and then things start happening in ways that are far, far more Kafkaesque and creepy, where that becomes a very short degree of separation between tax agencies suddenly knocking on your door and being more curious than ever. Like when those start becoming an added dog on a leash of a really toxic, desperate administration who is, God knows what these people have at their at their fingertips to make dissent of any kind really difficult and really uncomfortable. And at a time when you have the president of China sworn in for life and massive re-education camps where they're picking up millions of people on the street and re-educating them in the province of Xinjiang, for example. Do you know anything about this? The Uyghurs, the Muslim China and what's happening? I mean, you're talking about incredibly powerful people who are consolidating more and more power and shifting the world's relationship to free information and to dissent. It's more about dissent that I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah. Has your experience, you know, in investigating this case and sort of, you know, going down this rabbit hole, has it changed your political leanings at all?
I don't know if it's changed my political leanings. I'm a liberal person. I'm a liberal voter in general. I wouldn't say across the board, but in general. But it does have me questioning everybody much more. There's so many more. I'm aware of so many more hidden agendas. There are so many organizations and foundations which have a sort of self-perpetuated myth of this halo over their head with incredibly I'm trying to not talk in ways that are too vague, but there are institutions out here and foundations that really promote goodwill and transparency and freedom of information. And you'll often scratch the surface and see, those people have a whole lot of, those people also have political aims and political affiliations. So, yeah, it has affected. I'm starting to question everything a little bit more. That's all.
Is there any takeaways that you have from your experience that you'd recommend for other people? You know, I love the idea, you know, of questioning things, being more open to looking into the hidden motives behind different decisions or different actions. Anything that you'd, you know, recommend for people to, you know, set their mindset to?
Yeah, check the criminal justice systems. Check the world's criminal justice systems. There are people who get painted criminals and thrown behind bars, and there are people who belong there, but there are so many people in the world that are just thrown to the dogs, and their lives and their reputations and their families are brutally tarnished. And there's such a lack of justice within the justice systems. And I think there's so much to just hear about the privatizing of the prison system, which is fabulous to have worked on Orange is the New Black and seeing their commentary on it. To be around Nick Sandow and Jenner First, who put the whole Time series together about Khalif Browder and seeing what happened to that kid as a peephole into what is happening in the American prison system, and to see that those systems are actually becoming privatized and turned into a business. That's the scariest stuff. It's the scariest thing. It's just to see how that's happening all over the world. I think it's really important. The watchdog organizations that try to illuminate this facet and this kind of tool of the state are of great, great, great value. Such as Penn, for example. It's really important. People are branded criminals and branded terrorists and branded all these things just because someone who's got a little more weight to throw around is served by them being painted in this way. And there's so much of that. So, yeah, these are scary times. I think that what you're doing, though, is really important. We have got to keep intelligent conversations happening. We've got to look a little bit deeper than what's on the front page sometimes, you know?
Yeah,
and it's very confusing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we're seeing sort of an expansion in both directions. It's scary times. And then, you know, it's, you know, people are very optimistic in other ways. You know, this format, like long form conversations, podcasts in general, are, you know, growing a popularity every single day, year over year. And, you know, it allows people to be more informed on some of these different subjects, and hopefully it'll counteract the other negativity that we're seeing around us.
Yeah, to some degree, I would hope so. But I just hope that it's funny. I have a friend who was a New York Times front page editor for many years, who was, who basically was coming with, I'd speak to this guy weekly, have a drink with him weekly, and he would talk about how the hierarchy at the New York Times is just how the standard of work is slipping and falling apart all the time. It's crumbling, and not because, and it's basically the culture that once supported news that's delivered in a certain way with a certain level of integrity, is the fabric of that culture is falling apart. And there are people, you know what, I'm so, this is easily turning into, you know, pub chat, you and I at this point, not on your part, but on mine, Patrick, because I have friends who are real players in the news world. I mean, serious photo editors and people who are just really plugged into information and news on a level that's so beyond me. I'm into my first nonfiction piece that happens to be about a heavy, multifaceted subject, but I'm really quite a newbie here. I can talk with great conviction and clarity about how I help narrative artists tell their stories. And I'm very lucky to have been working on projects that draw from the front pages as much as they do and have. I'm really, really fortunate. But, you know, this, who knows where taking on a project like this will take one's life. You know, God knows what doors will open and which will close as a result. You know, is there consequences to our choices?
Absolutely. Well, I really commend you for the work that you're doing. I think it's really awesome to take on such a different kind of task than what you're used to, and to share this story. So please, you know, as soon as you have a release day, you got a title in mind, I'd love to share with the audience. And, you know, I know you're busy over there, and you know, it's probably getting pretty late. I really appreciate your time today. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
I can't say there's anything. It's been a real satisfying exchange, Patrick. So thank you for making some time and inviting me to this forum. And hopefully that this can be of some service to to your audience. And no, not really. Just keep on doing what you're doing. And I'm inspired by it. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, please hit the subscribe button and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. You can find us on Twitter at KWC Pod, on Instagram at Knowledge Without College Podcast. You can find me, Patrick Butler, at Patrick Butler 00 on Instagram and Twitter. I encourage you to send over any feedback you have. If there's any guests you'd like to hear on the show, any topics you'd want to hear discussed, I want to know about it. I want to hear your feedback and opinions. So please help me make this a better experience for you, and I look forward to hearing from you. Have an excellent day, and thanks for listening.